sitting there by the left turn line, flag on his wheelchair, flapping in the breeze, one leg missing, both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him, the VA budget's just stretched thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast War. We can't make it here anymore. That big old building was a text to mail. It fed our kids and it paid our bills. But they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore. You see those pallets piled up on the loading dock? They're just gonna sit there till they rot. Cause there's nothing to ship, nothing to pack. Just rusted concrete and rusted tracks. The empty storefronts around the square. There's a needle in the gutter and glass everywhere. You don't come down here unless you look at the score. We can't make it here. The bar's still open, but man, it's slow. The tip jar's light and the register's low. The bartender don't have much to say. The regular crowd gets theater each day. Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. You gotta have proof, this is right yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores, but you can't make it here.
Hey, good morning. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker right here in North Central Indiana on the October the 3rd. How about that? You're going to get to meet all the spooks this month when they come around your door. You better have a gun there because it could be the other kind of spook. And you can treat them too. Treat them with a 44 Magnum. How about that? Yeah, that'd be a nice treat for a bad boy. And welcome to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Steakhouse and Filling Station, where we only sell Ethel and regular like the old days. Yeah. And that's right next to our Weapons of Mass Destruction used equipment yard, and you're going to need some of that used equipment the way it looks. Don't pay attention to this stupid election. Keep your eye on the ball. Keep your eye on the ball. Well, I see Plastic Man's running 3% in the polling down in Louisiana, which, of course, he is running within a crew of 24 people have filed a run for senator down there in Louisiana. So, looks like old Plastic Man's a little bit outnumbered, man. Yeah, I would never get into a race that had 24 other candidates in it. That's wasting a lot of money. Well, we got, 3 weeks till the big circus comes to town? Well, the circus has been in town a long time, but that's the big day in the big top when all the creatures are in under the big top and all the fun and games and, all the elephants are in the room. I got to tell you, boys and girls, I don't want you to misunderstand. I will not be supporting Donald Trump. He's phony as a $3 bill. And on the race issue, he's a kind of could be a racist of the rich, because there are plenty of racist rich whites that would just as leave screw you to the wall as look at you. They don't care about. It would be like the plantation owners down south. They didn't give a shit about the working class, the poor working class. In fact, they got along a lot better, had a lot more regard for the Negro, especially the house Negroes. Yeah, and the nigger mammies that were allowing your babies to suck on her tit, stuff like that. Please, please do not fall into this Trump trap. I said at the very beginning of this thing, he's going to say all kinds of things that you're going to misconstrue as being really good things that are going to happen. It's not going to happen. Even if he were great, he's not going to be elected. Don't waste your time. Spend your time preparing how to thwart the wicked bitch who's going to be president. You'll have all you can handle once she gets on the high horse. And she will get on the high horse. She wants your head, man. She wants your head. So don't waste your time and the money. I see one guy out in California, so-called conservative, racially oriented. He's supposed to be a white nationalist. Gave $12,000 to Trump. $12,000. We're lucky to get a, well, you know how that goes. If you tell the truth and the whole truth as best you can, you're never going to get big money, that's for sure. That's why I never planned on getting big money in the first place. I knew the average white person, even if he calls himself a racist, is just not up to a real battle. They're into a lot of bullshit and hero worship and like that, but they're not in it for the long haul, and they're not in it for us or them. So while a lot of these people are going to be running down there to vote, I'm going to be busy at home preparing for what's coming from Hillary once she's in, because she's going to get in. Don't kid yourself. This has all been a scam from the beginning. It's a great scam. It worked great for them, for the ruling class, not for you and me. You never can believe those bastards. But somehow, millions of white people, who should know better, end up buying the poison drink, the Kool-Aid. They drink the Kool-Aid every 4 years. They drink the Kool-Aid. Yeah. You know, it's no wonder students hate the schools. They hate so-called education, which they know most of it's bullshit. I see where the couple of kids down there in Florida wore a make-believe KKK uniform to the party and to school. Now they're looking at suspension. Nothing is going to piss those guys more off more at public education than treating them like that. If they treat it as a joke and not worry about it, it'd be okay. But this this type of treatment of these kids for putting on a sheet or even a Klan uniform works against the system, actually. Youngstown, Ohio. Mahoning County Democratic Party Chairman David Beatrice said he was dismayed to read a comment by Columbiana County GOP Chairman Dave Johnson that if a Ku Klux Klan member were at a public rally, the Donald Trump campaign wouldn't throw that person out. Well, how do they know it's a Klansman? Unless he's wearing the Klan robes. And if not, how else would you tell unless he had a sign on his chest, I'm the KKK? Johnson made the statement in a Vindicator column Friday about Trump's campaign rejecting the comments of Kathy Miller, the Republican presidential nominee's former Mahoning County chairwoman, who resigned after making controversial comments about race and black Americans. On a Friday conference call with local black leaders, Beatrice said that the Trump campaign, quote, should do everything they can to keep the KKK out of their rallies. Well, I thought everybody was welcome to come to these rallies. They sure love to ask the blacks to come. The black leaders spoke primarily about Miller and Trump's campaign embracing racism, something Johnson had said isn't accurate. Well, it probably isn't directly accurate. Johnson said, quote, I should not have said the KKK, but criticized the columnist for including his statement. Read more about the matter in Saturday's Vindicator newspaper at vindy.com. Well, they just don't like to be democratic. I thought this was a democratic society. And everybody's welcome. All races, all creeds, all religions, all sexes. No, some animals are more equal than others. You got to learn that, boys and girls. All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. But who really gives this shit? Take their democratic rallies and their political parties and shove them straight up their ass. We don't need them. We don't want them. And that's not what's going to solve the problem in this country. You know what's going to solve the problem. I know what's going to solve the problem. So let's quit pissing around. Harrisonburg, Virginia. A clearly racist sticker. One sticker someone put up on a lamppost right on the main street upsets folks in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Well, I got the answer to that. Let's start busing niggers into Harrisonburg, Virginia. They need more of them. And then get all a bunch of non-whites from the Middle East. All these people that swear they love non-whites and blacks, fill their towns with it. Put stickers all over the big cities. Go to Harrisonburg, Virginia. We love niggers. That's the way to advertise. A municipality that likes to call itself the friendly city. Friendly to everybody that's not white. One downtown business, the Golden Pony, offered a $200 gift card reward for anyone who can get a picture of or identify the person putting up the stickers, according to a post on their official Facebook. Well, I would say this, all the Klansmen or whoever should go down there at the Golden Pony and walk in full uniform with baseball bats and bring your glove and a ball too. The black sticker pictures a white hand and an upraised middle finger above the phrase race mixers. Well, that's a good ad. As if it weren't already clear that the sticker gives the middle finger to people of multicultural relationships or families, you better believe it, buddy. The only other words on the sticker are the URL of the white supremacist website. Lest it to be considered editorializing to call the website white supremacist, the reader should be aware that of what's on the site. See, these guys do your advertising for you, KKK. It's mostly a catalog site for Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazi, neo-Confederate, and self-identifying skinhead audience. The site even has a KKK section with stickers and t-shirts. The section sells KKK logo stickers and also strange hybrid flag design combining a Gestapo SSS rune with a familiar Confederate battle emblem. See, that all represents rebellion. Don't you get it, editor of this newspaper that put this out? Don't you get it? It's all about rebellion. Some of the KKK-themed merchandise features what passes for humor in Klan circles. One design pictures a hooded Klansman around a burning cross with the words, the original boys in the hood. Another designed as Klansman with a Christmas tree and the words, dreaming of a white Christmas. I think you should have one with a ring of fire around the White House. The website sticker section has white pride worldwide. Well, you should have white pride worldwide. That's the name of the game. White power and 100% white designs. as well as various hate messages using the N-word. That means nigger. The sticker's area second page includes a Hitler smiley face, M-O-G design, and also a Rahoa white first emblem from the creators. Rahoa is a white supremacist code for a racial holy war. Yeah, get it on. The site sells 100 packs of pre-printed white supremacist windshield leaflets. The site's very name refers to a tightly stretched lynching rope. The website logo is a noose. Simply put, it is a white supremacist website. Run for your life, Grace Mixes. To avoid unintentionally advertising that website, this article will be directed to publish its entire name. Will not directly publish its entire name. As for the middle finger Race Mixer sticker found in Harrisonburg, one was noticed on a street lamp post outside the Golden Pony on Friday, September 23rd, according to the pony's owner, Paul Summers. That's his name, Paul Summers. That sticker didn't last long before folks picked at it and finally used nail polish remover to make it go away. Well, just keep putting them up, boys and girls. Summers told WHSV's Terry Ward that another one was stuck to a hairstylist's car just around the corner. Oh, my God. The White Unicorn Hair Salon, where the stylist works, is owned by someone of Puerto Rican heritage, according to Summers. Summers said more stickers were seen on cars around the intersection of E. Wolf and Broad Streets. Run for your lives! The KKK is coming. Summers said, considering his family and community connections, the whole bigotry for race mixing really hits home. Good, good. Summers said hair salon staff notified police, who made a note of the incident. They're such chicken shits. You know, if these people had any balls, they'd just go out with a razor blade, scrape it off. But they got to call a cop. Please, Mr. Cop, save us from the Ku Klux Klan. Well, pardon me, sir. I am in the Ku Klux Klan. Oh, my God. The Golden Pony's reward offer, note that Facebook also said one of the wonderful hairstylists next door had one put on her car. And we found one on our light pole outside the Golden Pony. Now, you see, these stickers are only about two inches by 3 inches. And they're going stark raving crazy. What cowards most people are. Absolute total cowards most white people are. They're all out there to defend the Negro, the honor of the wonderful superior Negro. This is not acceptable. Please, anyone that sees this person, take their picture and snitch him off to the cops, because that's what we do best. We are firm supporters of people's ability to love whoever they choose to love. Well, you probably choose to love your dog, too, but the wrong way. The $200 gift card reward offer still stands. Summers updated WHSV on October 1st. Nothing has turned up. Nobody has snitched anybody off. They're all scared. A few people suggested someone with some consistency, but no hard evidence and no concrete suspects. And all I can do is keep an eye out. I haven't seen any more pop up or heard of any. So it seems to have had its run, I suppose. Summers added it was nice to see people reacting positively by snitching off their neighbors. That's all white people can do anymore is worship and kiss the ass of the niggers and mestizos and turn other white people in. If you want to turn them in, boys, get your $200. No, that's the pony bars giving that out. But you call the Harrisburg Police Department. Non-emergency number, 540-434-4436. And they'll come out and save your ass from the KKK. They even put a map. They even put a map of where these stickers turned up on the website here, where all the businesses are and the churches and high schools. And it's got little red dots of where they found these horrible, horrible racist stickers. Run for your lives! Boy, oh boy. White Americans have become total cowards about anything. They're afraid of anything. And they'll call the cops immediately. Oh my God, look at what my neighbor did. Probably one day they'll call the cops for somebody putting up an American flag. He put up a goddamn American flag. That's racist. Well, all that excitement came from Harrisonburg, Virginia, or thereabouts. Boy, Virginia ain't like it used to be. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, it ceases to exist as any kind of white symbol. Well, what about all those guys that fought in the Civil War? Even the Yankees, most of them would probably be embarrassed. Well, I went to the movies yesterday by myself. Oh, well, I took my dog, but he stayed in the van. I'm a Western fan. I love Western movies. And I was a little reticent, but I went to see this, The Magnificent Seven, because I'd seen the two previous versions. And I must say, I was disappointed. I was afraid I'd be disappointed because it was too big of an operation. They had hundreds of bad guys going against a handful of supposedly good guys. They had race mixing in the Seven. They had three or four white people, and the rest were non-whites. And then the hero. Yeah, the hero. Now, Denzel Washington is no Yul Brynner. I'll tell you that. Yeah, he was in all black. Loose fit, though, because he's got a paunch. He got a belly sticking out there. And, I remember Yul Brynner, how straight he walked with a straight back and his chest thrown out. Yeah. Anyhow, the townspeople, or at least one woman, gives them some money to get some gunfighters and go to their town and get rid of this despotic guy that owned a big gold mine in the town. Of course, that was the center of the money, you know. That's the way with most of those towns. They had a miner or somebody that was running the show. He had all these hired guns with badges, you know. But anyhow, here's old Denzel. He's telling them how to do it. He's training these farmers to fight these professional gunfighters. And it's sort of funny because it's very unrealistic. The first one was realistic, the first two. But this was not, believe me. I was sitting there. People were looking at me in the theater because every time he'd make one of his big braggadocious speeches, I'd laugh. I was laughing at Denzel. People didn't know. They couldn't figure out, why is that guy laughing? But they had a Chinaman. They had a Mexican. They had an Indian. And they had two or three white guys. Now, the two or three white guys he had were good. They were really good, but they would go into town and they had a shootout with the skeleton force that was in the town working for the mine owner. They shot them all up. None of their guys got shot at all. That's what's always amusing. Hundreds of shots going on and the good guys, none of them get shot. Well, anyhow, then the big boss, he's off in San Francisco putting his money in the bank, his gold, and he gets the message that these upstarts have taken his town. And so all of a sudden you see him coming back with about 100 guys riding. He's got about 100 guns coming with him. And these 100 guns attack the town. Well, meanwhile, the big man, Denzel Washington's trained them all and set up all kinds of traps and guerrilla operations, and he's got them really going. So now get this, most of these guys, I think all the guys that rode into town that came from San Francisco to show these upstarts what was what, were white guys. So most of the movie is these, a lot of non-whites killing white guys. Yeah, so that's, I really enjoyed that, sure. So anyhow, in the end, Denzel, who's a super duper hero, and everybody's thanking him and hugging him, and he gets on his horse and rides into the sunset. I don't recommend this movie unless it comes around cheaper on the internet or something, because I paid $7 to see it and I was upset that I'd sort of wasted my money. I'm telling you, this nigger hero worship's getting out of hand, and of course these kids believe, these young kids, believe me, they don't know any better. And they're grabbing onto this worshiping the Negroes, which is totally ridiculous, because in real life, they probably would have hung the Negro when he rode into town by himself. I mean, whether he's going to help him or not, they'd probably hung him. I don't know what it's going to take to get these young people in this generation out of this nigger worship. Probably a collapse of the economy. Everything goes to shit, and crime in the streets and dead bodies in the streets. That might wake them up. I don't know. We'll see about that. Anyhow, dig out the, I'm pretty sure there were two Magnificent Sevens, but the one that's really the best was Yul Brynner's version. And you can get that on Netflix, I think. Somehow I've gotten my mind that Pat Wayne, John Wayne's son, was in that film. And I had met Pat Wayne personally, because I've told you before, I was dating a gal and her roommate was dating Pat Wayne, so I got to meet him personally. I'm not sure, though, for sure whether he was in that picture or not. If they want to run Denzel Washington as a hero, they're going to have to send him to the fat farm. I remember Hopalong Cassidy in his later years got a paunch when he'd ride into town. He was getting a little chubby around the middle, too. I think Whip Wilson had a little gut on him, too, as I recall. Which always reminds me of that documentary I did that they keep playing, that British bastard Louis the Creep, when he asked, did I think I was better looking than Denzel Washington? I said, hell yes, even if I'm twice his age, I'm better looking than he is.
Special report. The United States propaganda war against Russia is spinning out of control, rolling ever faster downhill with a dangerous momentum that threatens to drive the world into a nuclear showdown, reports Robert Perry. By Robert Perry. Through an endless barrage of ugly propaganda, the United States government and the mainstream American press have put the world on course for a potential nuclear showdown with Russia, an existential risk that has been undertaken cavalierly amid bizarre expressions of self-righteousness from Western institutions. This extraordinarily dangerous moment reflects the insistence of the establishment in Washington that it should continue to rule the world and that it will not broach the possibility of other nations asserting their own national interests even in their own neighborhoods. The United States Secretary of State John Kerry listens to Russian President Vladimir Putin in a meeting room at the Kremlin in Moscow, Russia, at the outset of a bilateral meeting on July 14, 2016. State Department photo. The United States Secretary of State John Kerry listens to Russian President Vladimir Putin in a meeting room at the Kremlin in Moscow, Russia, at the outset of a bilateral meeting on July 14, 2016. State Department photo. Rather than adjust to a new multipolar world, the powers that be in Washington have deployed a vast array of propaganda assets that are financed or otherwise encouraged to escalate an information war so aggressively that Russia is reading this onslaught of insults as the conditioning of the Western populations for a world war. While that may not be the intention of President Obama, who in his recent United Nations address acknowledged the risks from imposing unipolar order on the world, a powerful bureaucratic machinery is in place to advance the United States propaganda goals. It is operating on a crazed autopilot hurtling toward destruction but beyond anyone's ability to turn it off. This machinery consists not just of outlets and activists funded by the United States tax dollars via the National Endowment for Democracy or the United States Agency for International Development or NATO's Strategic Communications Command, but like-minded human rights entities paid for by billionaire currency speculator George Soros or controlled by neoconservative ideologues who now run major the United States newspapers, such as the Washington Post and the New York Times. This propaganda apparatus now has so many specialized features that you get supposedly progressive and anti-war organizations promoting a major the United States invasion of Syria under the guise of sweet-sounding policies like no-fly zones and safe zones, the same euphemisms that were used as the gateway to bloody regime change wars in Iraq and Libya. There exists what intelligence veterans call a mighty Wurlitzer, an organ with so many keys and pedals that it's hard to know where all the sounds come from that make up the powerful harmony, all building to the same crescendo. But that crescendo may now be war with nuclear-armed Russia, which finds in all this demonizing the prelude to either a destabilization campaign aimed at regime change in Moscow or outright war. Yet, the West can't seem to muster the sanity or the honesty to begin toning down or even showing skepticism toward the escalating charges aimed at Russia. We saw similar patterns in the run-up to war in Iraq in 2002 to 2003 and in justifying the ouster, torture and murder of Libya's Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Western propaganda also has enveloped the conflict in Syria to such an extent that the American people don't understand that the United States government and its regional allies have been supporting and arming jihadist groups fighting under the command of Al-Qaeda and even the Islamic State. The propaganda has focused on demonizing Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, while downplaying or ignoring the real nature of the moderate opposition, taking aim at Putin. In many ways, the Western insistence on regime change in Syria ties indirectly to the extraordinary escalation of that strategy to seek regime change in Russia. In August-September 2013, America's neocons and liberal war hawks were salivating over the prospect of the United States military bombing campaign to devastate Assad's army as punishment for his alleged role in a sarin gas attack outside Damascus. The United States Secretary of State John Kerry, flanked by Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Toria Nuland, addresses Russian President Vladimir Putin in a meeting room at the Kremlin in Moscow, Russia, at the outset of a bilateral meeting on July 14, 2016. State Department photo. The United States Secretary of State John Kerry, flanked by Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs Victoria Toria Nuland, addresses Russian President Vladimir Putin in a meeting room at the Kremlin in Moscow, Russia, at the outset of a bilateral meeting on July 14, 2016. State Department photo. Although the intelligence was weak regarding Assad's guilt and subsequent evidence has pointed to a likely provocation by radical jihadists using homemade sarin and a jerry-rigged rocket, official Washington was rubbing its hands at the prospect of a retaliatory bombing operation that would punish Assad and advance the cause of regime change. At the last minute, however, President Obama listened to the doubts from his intelligence advisors and rejected what he later called the Washington playbook of a military response to a complex problem. To the annoyance of Washington insiders, Obama then collaborated with President Putin in a diplomatic settlement in which Syria surrendered all its chemical weapons while still denying any role in the sarin attack. Obama was accused of weakness for not enforcing his red line against chemical weapons use. The despair over Obama's failure to bomb the Syrian government and open the path for a long-desired regime change in Damascus led to a search for other villains, the most obvious one being Putin, who then became the focus of neocon determination to make him share their pain and disappointment. National Endowment for Democracy President Carl Gershman took to the op-ed page of the Washington Post in late September 2013 to declare that Ukraine was now the biggest prize and represented an important interim step toward eventually toppling Putin in Russia. Gershman, who is essentially a neocon paymaster dispensing $100 million a year in the United States taxpayers' money to activists, journalists, and various other operatives, wrote, "Russians, too, face a choice, and Putin may find himself on the losing end not just in the near abroad but within Russia itself." Within weeks, the United States neocons, including Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs Victoria Nuland and Senator John McCain, were encouraging right-wing Ukrainian nationalists to overthrow Ukraine's elected President Viktor Yanukovych, a coup accomplished on February 22, 2014, touching off a civil war between Ukraine's West and East. As part of that Western propaganda barrage, the Ukraine coup ousting the elected president was hailed as a victory for democracy and Yanukovych's supporters in the South and East, who resisted this imposition of illegitimate authority in Kiev, became the target of AU.S-backed anti-terrorism operation Orado. Led by the New York Times and the Washington Post, the Western media fell in line behind the preferred narrative that there was no coup, that there were no neo-Nazis spearheading the non-coup, or maybe just a few, that the Heavenly Hundred who died in the putsch against Yanukovych had given their lives for Ukraine's freedom, even though some of the Heavenly inconveniently were neo-Nazi street fighters, part of a paramilitary force that had killed some 16 police officers. Killing terrorists. Given the West's pro-coup propaganda themes, it became necessary to justify the thousands of eastern Ukrainians slaughtered in the Aido as the killing of terrorists or Russian stooges, getting what they deserved. The 96% vote in Crimea's referendum to reunify with Russia had to be a sham, since the West's narrative held that the Ukrainian people were thrilled with the putsch, so the Crimeans must have voted that way at Russian gunpoint. Screenshot of the fatal fire in Odessa, Ukraine, on May 2, 2014. From RT Video. Screenshot of the fatal fire in Odessa, Ukraine, on May 2, 2014, killing scores of ethnic Russians trapped inside. From RT Video. The explanation of Crimea's secession from Ukraine was that Russia invaded and annexed Crimea, although there were no images of an invasion, no tanks crossing Crimea's borders, no amphibious landings, no paratroopers descending from the sky, because Russian troops were already in Crimea as part of a basing agreement and helped protect Crimea's inhabitants so they could hold their vote, which did represent their desires. Because the Western propaganda insisted that the new authorities in Kiev were wearing white hats, the Russians had to be fitted with black hats. Every bad thing that happened was automatically Putin's fault. So, when Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 was shot down over eastern Ukraine on July 17, 2014, the West's propaganda machinery whirred into action, blaming Russia for supposedly giving the ethnic Russian rebels powerful Buk anti-aircraft missiles. The propaganda momentum was so strong by then that there was no Western support for Russia's request for a United Nations investigation. Instead, the inquiry was largely turned over to the torture-implicated Ukrainian Intelligence Service, the SBU, upon which the Dutch and Australians, the other two principal members, became increasingly dependent, by their own admissions. Belgium and Malaysia played lesser roles. The Joint Investigation Committee, JIT, considered no serious alternatives to the Russians and the rebels being responsible. For instance, when the JIT released its report on September 28, 2016, there was no explanation offered for why Dutch intelligence, i.e. NATO intelligence, had concluded that the only missile systems in eastern Ukraine on July 17, 2014, capable of shooting down MH17 were controlled by the Ukrainian military. The JIT report was silent about where those Ukrainian Buk missile systems were at the time of the shoot-down. It's also a bit of a misnomer to describe the JIT's findings as a report, since they were really expressed in a series of videos featuring computer-generated graphics supposedly showing a Russian Buk crew driving around Ukraine, mixed in with a few photos from social media of a Buk convoy. Key to the JIT's findings were phone intercepts provided by the SBU and assembled to reinforce the impression of Russian guilt. The problem, however, was that except for one intercept in which someone said he'd like to have Buks, the word Buk is not mentioned, nor the word missiles, nor the word aircraft, nor any discussion about shooting down a plane. That was all supposition with an authoritative narrator filling in the gaps, ignoring contrary evidence. The JIT also ignored evidence that contradicted its conclusions, such as other intercepts reporting that a Ukrainian convoy had penetrated close to the eastern city of Luhansk. The significance of that revelation is that it confirms a point that has been largely ignored, that the Ukrainian military could move almost at will across rebel-controlled territory. The notion that the Ukrainian civil war was like World War I with fixed trench lines was simply a fallacy. Screenshot from the Joint Investigation Team's video report citing where a Russian Buk missile battery allegedly crossed into eastern Ukraine. Screenshot from the Joint Investigation Team's video report citing where a Russian Buk missile battery allegedly crossed into eastern Ukraine. The JIT also had to impose a bizarre route for the Russian Buk battery to follow on its way to the supposed firing location south of the remote eastern town of Snizhny. Because the social media photos show the Buk convoy heading east toward Russia, not west from Russia, the JIT had to map out a journey that ignored a simple, direct, and discreet route from the Russian border to Snizhny in favor of a trip more than twice as long roaming around eastern Ukraine all the way to Donetsk before turning eastward past a number of heavily populated areas where the Buk convoy, supposedly on a highly secret mission, could be photographed. The alleged firing location also conflicts with the alleged reason for the Russians taking the extraordinary risk of introducing a Buk system that it was needed to defend rebel soldiers then fighting mostly in the north against Ukrainian troops and aircraft. For that purpose, the positioning of a Buk battery far to the southeast makes little sense, nor does the decision for a Russian Buk crew to shoot down a commercial airliner flying at 33,000 feet. JIT's account of the post-crash exfiltration of the Buk convoy back to Russia also is curious, since again the shortest, easiest, and least populated route was ignored in favor of one that went far to the north past Luhansk, the alleged site of the supposed getaway video, although the supposed location of the getaway video was misplaced by Western media groups trying to pin the blame on Russia. The confirmed parts of the Buk convoy's route, that is, along highways east of Donetsk, would fit better with a scenario that, I'm told, received serious consideration from the United States intelligence analysts, that a Ukrainian Buk system under the control of a rogue military unit loyal to a fiercely anti-Putin oligarch traveled east into what was considered rebel-controlled territory to fire on what was hoped to be Putin's official plane returning from a state visit to South America, that is to kill Putin. A source briefed by these analysts said the missile was fired despite the unit's doubt that the plane was Putin's. Although it's unclear to me exactly what the United States intelligence consensus ultimately turned out to be on MH17, since I have been refused official updates, there would be logic in a Ukrainian hardliner staging such an audacious missile attack deep inside rebel territory, since any assassination of Putin would have to be explained as an accidental attack by his own allies, that is, the ultimate case of Putin being hoisted on his own petard. To evaluate which scenario makes more sense, that the Russians dispatched a Buk missile battery on a wild ride across eastern Ukraine, or that a Ukrainian Buk battery penetrated into supposedly rebel-controlled territory with the intent of attacking a civilian plane, although not MH17, it would be crucial to have an explanation of where the Ukrainian Buk batteries were located on July 17, 2014. Silence on Dutch intelligence. Some of the Russia Did It crowd have dismissed claims that Ukrainian Buk systems were in the area as Russian disinformation, but their presence was confirmed by a report from the Dutch Intelligence Service, MIVD, relying on NATO information to explain why commercial airliners were still being allowed over the war zone. A photograph of a Russian Buk missile system that the United States Ambassador to Ukraine Jeffrey Pyatt published on Twitter in support of a claim about Russia placing Buk missiles in eastern Ukraine, except that the image appears to be an AP photo taken at an air show near Moscow 2 years earlier. A photograph of a Russian Buk missile system that the United States Ambassador to Ukraine Jeffrey Pyatt published on Twitter in support of a claim about Russia placing Buk missiles in eastern Ukraine, except that the image appears to be an AP photo taken at an air show near Moscow 2 years earlier. The MIVD's explanation was that the only anti-aircraft missiles that could hit a plane at 33,000 feet were controlled by Ukraine, which was presumed to have no interest in attacking commercial aircraft, and that the rebels lacked any missile system that could reach that high. Clearly, there was an intelligence failure, because either some Ukrainian Buk operators did have an intent to strike a civilian plane, or the rebels did have a Buk system in the area. If the JIT were operating objectively, it would have included something about this intelligence failure, either by showing that it had investigated the possibility that Ukrainian Buk missiles were used by a rogue unit, or explaining how Western intelligence could have missed Russia's introduction of a Buk system into eastern Ukraine. Instead, there was just this video that includes cryptic phone intercepts, assertions about unnamed witnesses, and computer-generated graphics showing the movement of a Russian Buk convoy along darkened roads in Ukraine. Despite the unusual nature of this indictment, it was widely accepted in Western media as the final proof of Russian perfidy. The evidence was called overwhelming and conclusive. Rather than treating the video report as a prosecutor's brief, a set of allegations yet to be proved, Western journalists accepted it as flat fact, much as they did Secretary of State Colin Powell's similar presentation on February 5, 2003. Proving that Iraq was hiding weapons of mass destruction. Powell also used computer-generated images of Iraq's mobile chemical weapons labs that, in reality, didn't exist. The day after the JIT video report was issued, the New York Times lead editorial was headlined, "Mr. Putin's Outlaw State." It read, "President Vladimir Putin is fast turning Russia into an outlaw nation." As one of five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, his country shares a special responsibility to uphold international law. Yet, his behavior in Ukraine and Syria violates not only the rules intended to promote peace instead of conflict, but also common human decency. This bitter truth was driven home twice on Wednesday, September 28. An investigative team led by the Netherlands concluded that the surface-to-air missile system that shot down a Malaysia Airlines plane over Ukraine in July 2014, killing 298 on board, was sent from Russia to Russian-backed separatists and returned to Russia the same night. Russia has tried hard to pin the blame for the airline crash on Ukraine. But the new report, produced by prosecutors from the Netherlands, Australia, Belgium, Malaysia, and Ukraine, confirms earlier findings. It uses strict standards of evidence and meticulously documents not only the deployment of the Russian missile system that caused the disaster but also Moscow's continuing cover-up. President Obama has long refused to approve direct military intervention in Syria. And Mr. Putin may be assuming that Mr. Obama is unlikely to confront Russia in his final months and with an American election season in full swing. But with the rebel stronghold in Aleppo under threat of falling to the government, administration officials said that such a response is again under consideration. Mr. Putin fancies himself a man on a mission to restore Russia to greatness. Russia could indeed be a great force for good. Yet his unconscionable behavior butchering civilians in Syria and Ukraine, annexing Crimea, computer hacking American government agencies, crushing dissent at home suggests that the furthest thing from his mind is becoming a constructive partner in the search for peace. Rich irony. Granted, there is some rich irony in a major the United States newspaper, which helped justify illegal aggression against Iraq with false reporting about Iraq buying aluminum tubes for nuclear centrifuges, pontificating about international law. Former New York Times reporter Judith Miller. Former New York Times reporter Judith Miller, who co-authored the Times' bogus story about Iraq buying aluminum tubes for nuclear centrifuges. Indeed, the very idea that any serious person in the United States would lecture other countries about international law would be laughable if the hypocrisy were not delivered in such a serious set of circumstances. For decades now, the United States has been a law unto itself, deciding which countries should be bombed and who should be assassinated. President Obama himself has acknowledged authorizing military strikes in seven countries during his presidency, and many of those attacks were done outside international law. Indeed, the Times editorial appears to urge Obama to launch illegal military strikes against the Syrian government and, not surprisingly, doesn't mention the United States airstrike that killed some 62 Syrian government soldiers just last month, delivering a death blow to the partial ceasefire. Instead, you get a medley of the Times' greatest anti-Russian propaganda hits while ignoring the United States' role in destabilizing and overthrowing Ukraine's elected government in favor of a harshly anti-Russian nationalist regime that then began slaughtering thousands of ethnic Russians who resisted the coup. Nor does the Times mention that Russia is operating inside Syria by invitation of the sovereign government, while the United States has no such authority. And the Times leaves out how the United States government and its allies have covertly armed and funded jihadist rebels who have inflicted many of the hundreds of thousands of dead in Syria. Not everyone, including Syrian soldiers, was killed by Assad and the Russians, although that's the impression the Times leaves. A more nuanced account would reflect this murky reality in which sophisticated the United States weapons, such as TOW missiles, have ended up in the possession of Al-Qaeda's Syrian affiliate and its jihadist allies. It would acknowledge that many sides are at fault for these tragedies in Syria and Ukraine, not to mention all the bloodshed that has followed the U.S.-led and U.S.-enabled wars that have torn apart the Middle East over the past decade and a half. The Times might also admit that Putin was helpful in resolving the 2013 sarin crisis in Syria and achieving a breakthrough on the Iran nuclear talks in 2014. But that would not fit the propaganda need to demonize Putin and ready the American people for another, even more terrifying regime change, this time in Moscow. What we can now expect are a series of legal actions brought against Russia in connection with the MH17 case and other controversies. The goal will be to further demonize Putin and to destabilize Russia, a process already underway with economic sanctions that have helped throw Russia's economy into recession. The neocon plan is to ratchet up tensions and pain so Putin's elected government will somehow collapse, with the neocons hoping that some the United States lackey will take over and allow another round of shock therapy, that is the plunder of Russia's resources to the benefit of a few favored oligarchs and their American consultants. However, given the dreadful experience that the average Russian faced from the earlier round of shock therapy in the 1990s, including a stunning decline in life expectancy, the more likely outcome from even a successful neocon scheme of regime change would be the emergence of a much more hardline Russian nationalist than Putin. Whereas Putin is a calculating and rational leader, the guy who follows him might well be an ideologue ready to use nuclear weapons to protect Mother Russia's honor. After all, it's not as if one of these neocon regime change calculations has ever gone wrong before. Yet, whichever way things go, official Washington and its complicit mainstream media now appear determined to push Russia into a corner with military encroachments from NATO on Russia's borders and with criminal accusations before biased international investigations. Any misstep in this dangerous game could quickly end life as we know it. Investigative reporter Robert Perry broke many of the Iran-Contra stories for the Associated Press and Newsweek in the 1980s. You can buy his latest book, America's Stolen Narrative, either in print here or as an ebook, from Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, that's a long one, but it's important, very important, because it's goddamn State Department in this country and the military-industrial complex are moving us right into a very bad situation. Now, I don't trust anything they say or any plan they have going. In fact, I believe the Russians more than I do the United States government. How do you like that? This is Terrible Tommy, and this is the end of the show for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Tears Day. 14-5.